Wondery Plus subscribers can listen to The Vanished ad-free right now. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or Apple Podcasts.
How can he go missing and then his vehicle is also missing? His vehicle vanished with him the same day that he went. It has just been almost 30 years, and it's just crazy to see that somebody can vanish in thin air. Like, no, not a trace, nobody knows nothing, car's gone, no trace of the car, nothing. They've ran the VIN, I've even ran the VIN. I know people that work in title companies and they've ran the VIN, they've ran the license plate number, nothing comes up. It's like the car just went with him and disappeared off the face of the earth. After about a month or so, his friends kind of disappeared themselves, just like up and left and didn't tell anybody anything, which was the weirdest thing. And I really don't remember how my father and my uncle, which is my father's brother, found out that they were in Texas. And they didn't tell anybody they were going to Texas, his friends that were there helping throughout the search, his friends that were always there with him. I remember my dad buying plane tickets, and we all went to Texas. And we showed up to his friend's uncle's house.
On Saturday, September 23rd, 1989, 23-year-old Adrian Planels did the same thing he always did before leaving for work. As he got ready to head out the door, he told his younger sister Barbara, "See you later, alligator." And she responded, "After a while, crocodile." That was the last time Barbara ever saw or spoke to her brother. Adrian went to work that night and clocked out in the early morning hours of the 24th. He went across the street and had a beer with coworkers before heading home with the intent to study for an upcoming exam for one of his college courses. This is the last time anyone reported seeing Adrian Planels. And in the 30 years since his disappearance, there has been no sight of Adrian or the 1968 Chevrolet Camaro he was driving that night. I'm Marissa, and from Wondery, this is episode 200 of The Vanished. Adrian Planel's story. Audible offers thousands of popular favorites, exclusive new series, guided wellness programs, comedy, and exciting new voices in audio. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog. The Audible app makes it easy to listen anytime, anywhere, while traveling, working out, walking, doing chores, you decide. I like to listen a little bit each evening while I'm cooking dinner, and it's great for my evening walks too. Recently, I've been listening to Lay Them to Rest by Laura Norton. It's a fantastic audiobook. You don't want to miss it. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/MIA or text MIA to 500-500. That's audible.com/MIA or text MIA to 500-500. Kenner, Louisiana is a suburb north of New Orleans that spans 15 square miles. In 1990, a year after Adrian's disappearance, the population was just about 72,000 people. Like much of Louisiana, the town is surrounded by lakes and rivers. Back in September of 1989, Adrian Planels had his entire life ahead of him. He and his family resided in Kenner, Louisiana, where Adrian attended a local college and was studying psychology with the aspiration of one day becoming a psychologist. He also worked at a nearby restaurant and spent his free time fixing cars with his friends. For this story, we spoke with Adrian's younger sister, Barbara. She told us what she remembers about her brother.
Well, my brother, he was the type of person where he liked to joke around a lot, and he was very friendly. He had a lot of friends. I remember, you know, when he disappeared, I was 11, about to be 12. But I do remember as I was growing up, the house was always filled with his friends. They would come over and hang out. He enjoyed working on cars from when he was young. And he would always hang out with his friends. And he had a friend that lived, I want to say, 3 or 4 blocks down from the house. And he had a garage there. And they would go and work on cars, rebuild engines, rebuild transmissions, rebuild cars from scratch, basically. And he I remember he was always a real happy person, you know, and when he got to be in his early 20s, of course, like any young man, he partied and he would drink, he would go out with his friends and stuff of that nature. But he was a good son. I do remember him being really close to my mom and dad. And he was a good brother to us. I mean, he always made sure that we were taken care of. And he was just an all-around good person to be around. Like, I don't remember my brother ever, like, starting any trouble in school or anything like that. He was always a good student. He was going to college to be a psychologist. I want to say he was in his second year of school, trying to finish his undergrad to then go and get his master's and his PhD or whatever in psychology. So he had a plan in action, and he was just enjoying life, working at a restaurant on the weekends, making money to help pay for his car insurance. My dad was helping him pay for college. So he would only pay for his car insurance and his vehicle, gas, food, or whatever he wanted for himself while he was at school. But I mean, other than that, he was like a very chill person from what I remember. His usual routine, from what I remember, he would get up, he would go to school Monday through Friday. Sometimes he would have, I remember like his first semester, he took Monday through Friday classes. And then after that, he did Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. He would get up, go to school, he'd be in school all day. And then Tuesday and Thursday, he would work, and then he would work on the weekend. And then when he was off, he would hang out with his friends. But I mean, most of the time, like I said, he'd stay out of trouble. He would always be at the garage. He was always working on the car, like always working on cars. Like on his time off, that was his biggest passion, working on vehicles. But he also enjoyed helping people. And that's why I believe he wanted to go and be a psychologist, just like help people with their problems, because he would always give people advice. I remember that. And just try to like make sure that everybody was heading in the right direction in their life. You know, always trying to make sure that people kind of like felt passionate about what they would do. I always remember him talking to my sister and myself about that. Like, make sure when you get older and you start going a career, you get something that makes you happy, that you don't feel like you're working. You feel like you're enjoying what you do. Like, I always remember him saying that. And that was basically his routine during that time, with school and work and then hanging out with his friends at the garage, like working on cars and just like, you know, going out to bars and stuff of that nature, like typical, you know, 20-year-old hanging out with his friends.
Barbara was young at the time, but she remembers three friends that Adrian spent time with when he wasn't working or at school. The police have asked us not to use their names, so we've bleeped them out.
I always remember he had like these friends that they used to hang out with. He had three friends, which was, you know, and which he would always hang out with them. I used to always call them the four musketeers, even though it's supposed to be three musketeers, because they were always together. Like the guys would come to the house and hang out, or he would go to their house and hang out. They would go to the garage together, work on cars together. They went to school together. I think two of them went to school with him. The other one, I think they met through a job. I don't remember how they met, but they were always together. And he was really close to my cousin, my oldest cousin named Jimmy. They would always do stuff together as well. But I mean, I don't remember any of his friends ever causing trouble. You know, they were good kids. I don't remember any of them having like records or going to jail at that time or anything of that nature. They were always just working on cars and just being typical 20-year-olds, going out, drinking, dating, stuff of that nature.
The day Adrian disappeared was just like any other day in the Plinell's household. Adrian didn't have school since it was the weekend, but he was working the dinner shift at the restaurant where he waited tables and washed dishes. We know that he made it to work and worked his shift that evening. Barbara told us more about this.
I remember that day he got up, took a shower, started getting ready for work, and then he stopped and talked to my mom's friend for a little while, and then he was heading out the door and he told all of us goodbye. And then like, there was a saying that we would always say to each other, me and him, we always would say, see you later, alligator, after a while, crocodile. That was the last thing he ever told me as he got in the vehicle and drove off to go to work. So he left September 23rd to go to work. Now his birthday is September 20th. So he had just turned 23 years old. So the 23rd, he goes to work. From what they said, he worked his full shift because he clocked in at his time. I want to say it was 5 or 4. And he worked up until the closing time, and they show on the punch card that he punched out.
So we know Adrian made it to work, worked his shift, and clocked out. Co-workers were able to help piece the rest of the night together. Here's Barbara.
From what they were saying, after work, he went across the street to a bar with a couple of his coworkers to have a beer. They said that he only had one beer because he said he had to go home and study for an exam. So they said that they all had a beer, chit-chatted for a little bit, and then they said that my brother got in the vehicle. They seen him cross back across the street, get in his vehicle, and drive off. Now, nobody can remember what direction he was going in. My parents didn't live that far away from the restaurant at that time. I want to say maybe like 3 miles or so. So nobody can remember what direction he was going in. And that was the last time anybody seen him or his vehicle. His vehicle has never been found either. When my brother didn't come home, so they didn't think much of it because they were like, well, maybe, you know, he went out with his friends, you know, typical early 20-year-old thinking that maybe he went out with his friends and he just forgot to call. Because normally when my brother would go out with his friends and stay out, he would call to let my parents know, hey, listen, I'm going out. I'm not going to come home tonight, so don't wait up for me. My mom would always wait up until he would get home.
Barbara's parents weren't too concerned about Adrian being gone all night, though he usually called first to let them know when he was staying at a friend's house. But as the day wore on, his parents began to get worried that something bad had happened.
So they're thinking that maybe he had forgotten to call them. So they didn't think much of it until Sunday when it was like noonish and they started calling his friends just to see, hey, is he at anybody's house or anything? Nobody had seen him. Nobody had spoken to him, but nobody had seen him at all. So my parents started to panic and my dad called the police to report him missing. And then they started to do, like, you know, of course, they came and they took a report. They searched his room. All of his clothing was still there. He didn't take any clothes. He had two checks that were there. And I remember my dad saying something like he was supposed to go cash the checks and deposit the checks in his account on Monday because he didn't have to work. I think he had to go to school for an exam. And then that was all he had to do that day, or two exams, something like that. But he was going to deposit the check that Monday. And then they checked his bank account to see if there was any movement. There was nothing. Money was still there. Everything was still there. And so then they just started, I guess, monitoring it. And they started looking for him, started making flyers, questioning people. His friends came over to help as well with the search.
Police were interested in speaking with Adrian's two closest friends, thinking that they may have some valuable information about Adrian's disappearance. But before they had the chance, something strange happened. They vanished, too. Word spread that they might be in Texas, so Adrian's dad put the family on the next flight to Texas. He was intent on finding answers as to what happened to his son.
After about a month or so, his friends kind of disappeared themselves, just like up and left and didn't tell anybody anything, which was the weirdest thing. And I really don't remember how my father and my uncle, which is my father's brother, found out that they were in Texas. And they didn't tell anybody they were going to Texas, his friends that were there helping throughout the search, his friends that were always there with him. I remember my dad buying plane tickets and we all went to Texas and we showed up to his friend's uncle's house. We seen, but we'd never seen. And which was the uncle's name. He was really nervous when my dad like approached him. He was really nervous. He was very shaky. He wasn't looking him in the eyes. And, you know, by this, like I said, again, I was 11, about to be 12. I remember telling my dad, I think they know something, because you don't act nervous. And my dad always taught me that when you're telling the truth or when you're not hiding something, you're going to look at people in the eye. They were not looking at my dad in the eyes. They wouldn't look at any of it. They wouldn't even look at my mom in her face or in her eyes or anything. And they were all like shaky. Like they were giving us a plate of food with my dad. They invited us to stay there, which was the weirdest thing. And I don't know how my parents felt comfortable doing that, but they stayed there for the weekend. So we all stayed in one room and my mom and dad did like night watch. Like my mom would sleep for an hour, wake up, wake him up, and he would stay up for an hour while she took, while she slept for an hour, just to make sure they wouldn't come and do something. Cause we didn't know. We didn't know if they knew anything, if they'd done something, you know, you just don't know. So they were up all night just making sure that they didn't come and do something to any of us. But while we were there, like whenever they would give us a plate of food or whatever, like their hands would be shaky, like, you know, just nervous the whole time. We were there for the weekend and then we ended up flying back home. And my dad, I remember him telling his brother, and you know, when you're a kid, they always tell you not to be listening to adult conversations, but here's my brother who was missing. So of course I was eavesdropping behind the walls. So I was, you know, listening to conversations that he was having with my uncle. And he told my uncle that he didn't feel comfortable with the visit. Like he felt like they knew more than what they were saying. And he felt that it was funny how they just up and left, you know, just as a parent, you know, like when something's not right. So him and my uncle went back, but I don't know whatever came of that trip. I don't know if they got to see them again or if they didn't, but I know that when we went, my dad never got to see. And I remember my dad telling his uncle to tell him where he was working. And his uncle would be like, no, I can't tell you where he's working. You can't go over there, Mrs. Linnell. We can't let you go over there. And he's like, well, why not? This is my son, and I want to know what happened. I want to talk to him. The whole time we were there, the whole weekend, we never spoke to him. We never seen him. He avoided the house the whole time. So we never got to see, but we got to see the other guy. He came, and he would, like, stop by, but he wouldn't stay long.
We all know there are things in life that you have to compromise on, but when it comes to your health, there's no compromise. So don't settle for that one doctor that isn't really addressing your needs. Instead, check out ZocDoc, the place where you can find and book doctors who will make you feel comfortable, and you can even search by location, availability, and insurance. ZocDoc is a free app and website where you can search and compare highly rated in-network doctors near you and instantly book appointments with them online. Once you find the doc you want, you can book them immediately. You can filter specifically for ones who take your insurance, are located near you, and treat basically any condition you're searching for. The typical wait time to see a doctor booked on ZocDoc is between just 24 and 72 hours. That's it. I use this, and you should too. Go to ZocDoc.com/vanished and download the ZocDoc app for free. Then find and book a top-rated doctor today. That's ZocDoc.com/vanished. ZocDoc.com/vanished. This message is sponsored by Greenlight. When you're a parent, you'll have your fair share of big talks with your kids. One of those big talks should involve money, and Greenlight can help with that. Greenlight is a debit card and money app for families. You can send your kids instant money transfers, get real-time notifications of spending, manage chores, and automate allowance. I've been using Greenlight with my older two kids for years. One thing that I love about it is that I can set up recurring or one-time chores, customized to my family's needs, and then my kids earn an allowance to reward them for a job well done. Not only does it motivate them to actually get the chores done, but it also teaches them a bit about financial literacy and independence. They're learning to earn, save, and spend wisely. So stop putting off the money talk and start putting your kids on the right path. Sign up for Greenlight today and get your first month free at greenlight.com/vanished. That's greenlight.com/vanished to try Greenlight for free. One more time, that's greenlight.com/vanished. After a few days with no answers to the many questions surrounding Adrian's disappearance, his father packed up the family and headed back home to Kenner. Why had Adrian's friend acted so suspiciously? Why would the other one not come out of hiding? The police seemed to have given up too. For the next several years, Adrian's case remained untouched. And then Barbara stepped in, now an adult, determined to find out what happened to her brother.
They searched, but then it was kind of like, forgotten, kind of like a cold case. They just forget about it. No leads, no nothing. And then once I turned 18, because I was 11, 12. Once I turned 18, I then started going to the police station, asking questions, trying to get it reopened, wanting to see the files, wanting to see reports. And they will kind of like be vague with me, and they would never want to let me see the cold case files, which I know I have every right to see it as a sister, to see what was done and what wasn't done. They would always tell me, oh, call the archive office. I would call the number they gave me. It would be the wrong number. I would go back. They would give me another number. Like, they would just give me the runaround the whole time. And I could just come telling them, I just want to know what was done and what wasn't done, so that now that I'm an adult, I can pick up where it was left off and try to get this solved. And at that time, it had only been maybe 12, 13 years, something like that. So here we are, about to be 30 years in September. It's going to be 30 years. So when I turned 18, it wasn't so old yet, but they kept giving me the runaround. They would never want to help me. The police office never wanted to help me. And I remember, you know, of course, life happens. I got married. I had my child, going to college. Throughout it all, I would still try to stop by and see if there was anything new.
Even with her own family to care for now, Barbara continued to search for her brother. looking at unidentified remains on the internet, and checking in occasionally with the police. On one such occasion, she received some alarming news.
6 years ago, I was doing some searching on Google, and I found that there was LA Faces, which is in Baton Rouge. They had found, I guess, a few bodies, and they kind of matched descriptions, and they were saying that they were trying to match the descriptions two men. One of the men was my brother. I think my brother's name, and there was another guy. So I called a number because I'm like, well, what is this? I called a number, and as soon as I called the number and I said my last name, I just said, hi, my name is Barbara Parnell. As soon as I said that, the lady was like, are you Adrian's sister or Adrian's relative? I'm like, well, yes, I'm his sister. And she put me on hold, and she got the lady, I guess, that was in charge of the case. And the lady was just so surprised. She goes, are you really related to him? I'm like, yes, I'm his sister. I'm his baby sister. And I'm like, why are you acting so surprised? And she said, well, every year we would go to Kenner to get an update to see if there's anything new with the police station. And she said that the police department told them he had no family in this country, that he went missing and he had no family. And I was really upset because I'm like, how would they say that? Since I turned 18 years old, I would go there and I would tell, give them my, I made sure that they had my updated phone number, my updated address. Anytime I moved, I gave them my updated address. My phone number has always been the same, but I've always said, hey, I'm living in this apartment now. Here's my new address. Need anything? My number. Anybody needs anything, please let them contact me. Because she said that they told her that he had no family in this country, that he was basically here by himself. And I was like, how can they say that when I would go every year and get my presence? No. Like that, they're kind of like, it really upset me to see that they would say this to that lady. So, you know, she was eager to meet myself and my father because my mom had passed away. It's going to be 10 years in January that my mom passed away. So she was eager to come down, meet my father and I and get a DNA sample because when my brother went missing, they didn't have a DNA sample. They didn't have anything at all. So they came down, they got a DNA sample from my father, from myself. And then she showed me the files that she had from all the people that were missing that they were still trying to match like, I guess, families to them. And it really hurt to see all that. Like to think that maybe my brother was one of them. But she said that they had 150 bodies that were unidentified and they were going to run the DNA and try to see if maybe one of those bodies that they had found maybe could have been him. So it was going to take a while. When they finally finished everything, she called me herself, and she told me that he didn't match any of the bodies that they had, any of the DNA that they had from the 150 bodies that were unidentified. So in a way, I kind of had hope that he would be one of them to kind of like at least be done with that part and then kind of move on to like, okay, well, what happened? But then when she told us that he was not one of the bodies or one of the DNAs that they had from the missing unidentified bodies that they had found, it was kind of like, okay, well, we're back to square one.
With no leads and no body, Barbara felt like all this time had passed with no information about her brother. She still finds his friend's behavior after he disappeared to be strange, and she shared what she hopes for now.
Because it's funny how they just kind of like up and left and moved to Texas without saying anything. I feel like there's something there. Like they know more than what they're saying. So to me, it's like, I feel like they should re-question everybody again. Because after 30 years, maybe somebody's willing to talk now. Maybe somebody's willing to say, hey, you know what, this happened or that happened. And I know that I have told investigators myself, and I am very sincere when I said this to an investigator. I even told him this when I spoke with him the other day. I told him that if they were to admit wrongdoing or, you know what, hey, we got into an argument, we got into a fight and we accidentally killed him, something, whatever happened, he's no longer here. I told the investigator, I don't want to prosecute anybody. It's going to be 30 years, September 23rd. I'm not one to want to go sit in a courtroom and try to find justice in that way. To me, God's going to take care of it and karma's going to come to them. And I'm sure if they had anything to do with it, karma has been getting them as it is now. We don't know that. I guess I'll find out once we cross that bridge. But I honestly don't want to prosecute them. And I told the investigator that to tell them that because I feel like sometimes they'll sit there and they'll think like when they've done something wrong, oh, I don't want to spend the rest of my life in jail. I don't want to do this. I don't want to do that. So that's why they will keep it to themselves and die and take it to the grave with them because they don't want to go and spend a prison sentence, whatever. I'm not looking for that. I'm just looking for the truth.
Adrian and Barbara's mother has passed away, and their father is getting older. Barbara believes answers can be found before their father passes away also, since he has spent much of his life searching for his only son.
You know, it's like my mom, she passed away, like before she died, a week before my mother passed away. She said, I'm going to die without knowing what happened to my son. My father, he's 84. He just turned 84 in July. And my father often tells me, he was even telling me this last night. He was like, I wonder if I'm going to ever find out what happened to my son, or am I going to die and not know what happened to my son? And I told him, Dad, I'm doing everything I can to try to find out what happened to him, to give you that peace, because I don't want you to leave this earth and not know what happened. I don't want to leave this earth and not know what happened. And I'm only 40, but we don't know what can happen. Tomorrow's not promised to any of us. And I don't want to leave this earth without knowing what happened to my brother either. I want the honest truth. I want to know what happened to my brother, what was done to him, where is his remains, if there's anything left, so we can bring it home and just give him a proper burial and just be done with it. You go your way, we go our way. The investigator was like, are you sure that's what you want to do? I'm like, yeah. What is the point of trying to prosecute somebody now? My dad is 84 years old. I'm not going to put him through that. I'm not going to put him through going to court and sitting through that and having to relive all that again. I don't want to have to go through that either. So I would prefer to just give me what I want, which is the truth. If something happened, if you know something, and let's just be done with it. I don't think my brother is still alive. A lot of people are like, oh, maybe he's still alive. Maybe he has amnesia. Maybe he hit his head. I honestly don't think he's alive. I think either that same day that he left or either that same weekend, something happened and my brother was either killed, murdered, was maybe an accident, but I know that he's no longer here. I don't think he went past that weekend. And somebody somewhere knows what happened. They got rid of the vehicle because funny how the vehicle has never been found all these years later, like nothing, no matter if we've looked at, my dad went to every junkyard you can think of for many years. And just to look at cars and just look at VIN numbers. And anytime he's seen a car that was burnt up somewhere, my dad would literally stop and go look at the VIN number to see if it was the same car, license plate, stuff of that nature. I mean, imagine my father living with this torture for years, like always looking and looking and looking to see if he sees the car. Because if we found the car, we knew we had something. We've never even seen it. We've never even found the car, not a trace of the vehicle, not even a tire, nothing, nothing. So it's just like, I believe that same weekend he didn't make it. And either his car was taken and put in a chop shop, or they did something with the vehicle in order for us not to ever locate the vehicle again.
One of the most telling aspects of this case is that Adrian never cashed those paychecks he left in his room, and his bank account has never been touched. Barbara shared more on that.
I know that the investigator, you know, they've started questioning people lately, and they were told, his friends said that my brother did a weekend Texas trip. But like I was telling the investigator, if you do a weekend trip, you're going to take clothes with you. You're going to take money with you. You're going to need money for gas to get there and get back. You're going to need money to eat there and back. You're going to need clothes. When my brother left, he didn't take any clothes. He didn't take any money. He didn't take anything. And I just think that's the oddest thing, because he would have told my parents, hey, I'm doing a weekend trip with my friends. Okay, my parents would be like, okay, have fun. You know, because I've done many weekend trips with my son, and we always take clothes, even if it's for a day or two. You know, you take clothes. Even if you're staying at friends' houses, you still need money for gas and money for any little expense that you need to, you know, do when you're out drinking, stuff of that nature. So I just think that's odd that they would say that he went on a weekend trip but didn't take no clothes with him, didn't take any money. For many years, the bank account that my brother had opened, my dad would monitor it. Every other day, he would go in the bank and just check and be like, is there any activity? Is there any movement? And they would be like, no, everything's the same. Nothing's been deposited. Nothing's been taken out. After 7 years, my dad had to close the account because they said after 7 years of it being, I forgot how it was, not active, you have to either close it, take the money out, or move it into another account under another name. So what my dad did was, after 7 years of it not being active, nothing being put in, nothing being taken out, he took that money and he put it under my father's name and my name. And that money is still sitting there. Money has never been touched at all. So that's another sign to me that my brother, something happened to him that weekend, because That money was never touched for all those years, 7 years. That money was never, ever, ever touched, ever. And it's like, you're going to eventually going to need money. You're going to need money to even get an apartment, to do this, to do that. And I've had friends run his Social Security, people that work in Social Security office, and I know people that work in different places that can do those background checks for me. And they haven't seen any movement. It's like, last movement of him was in 89, which when he went missing. Nothing has happened with his social, like no credit checks, nothing like that. So it's just really weird. Like, he's just vanished from, just vanished in thin air. It's like he just drove off the face of the earth. Him in the car is gone. And it's just been agonizing for almost 30 years, like just wondering.
More than 30 years have passed since that day that Adrian walked out the front door and never returned home. When we reached out to the Kenner Police Department for an interview, something surprising happened. They decided to reopen Adrian's case. For this story, we spoke to Lieutenant Michael Cunningham, who has taken charge of the new investigation into Adrian's disappearance.
My name's Lieutenant Mike Cunningham. I'm the commander of the Criminal Investigation Division for the Kenner Police Department. City of Kenner is a suburb of New Orleans. I've been a police officer for 27 years. Most of the career has been in Investigations Detective Bureau. We don't have a dedicated missing person division. We're actually a smaller department. We're about 150 officers sworn. We do have a detective assigned to persons investigations, which will involve sexual assaults, robberies, homicides. And typically when we have like cold case reviews, we'll assign a senior officer who is a supervisor, like a sergeant or such as myself. We periodically review our old cold cases. That's homicide cases, typically on the missing persons, unless they were filed with the homicide cases as, you know, possible homicides, we typically won't come across it. In this case, it's actually come up a couple of times, and a lot of that was initiated by inquiries by media or such as yourself with podcasts.
We asked Lieutenant Cunningham how his department became involved in investigating Adrian's disappearance. You will notice some slight differences in the police records compared to Barbara's account of Adrian's disappearance. These variations are common in cases like Adrian's, being that it's 30 years old.
On September 25th, 1989, Adrian's mother called the police to report that Adrian hasn't been home or seen since September 23rd. Initial officer went out there, took the report, patrol officer, and then he went out on a second report when they had stated that an employee that Adrian had worked with was last seen with him at a bar. The officer took that report, forwarded it to a detective, and it was assigned a detective on October 5th of 1989. That detective went out there and he kind of began retracing the steps of when Adrian was last seen. From what we gathered from it, that Adrian worked at a restaurant, Casa Garcia, until about midnight. He left work with another employee. They walked within the same shopping strip to a local bar and sat in there and had some drinks. The employee that he was with was interviewed by the detective, and his story was corroborated by the barmaid. The friend had said that they went there after work to get a couple of drinks. He left Adrian about 2:30, told Adrian, come on, let's go. Adrian said, you know, he still had his drink. He wanted to finish. He'll leave. So the employee left at 2:30. Interviewing the barmaid, she corroborated that. And she said that the first employee left at 2:30. She said about 30 minutes later, Adrian had left, which would have been about 3 a.m. in the morning. And that was the last time he had been seen. There was no indication, you know, now I'm reviewing a report from 1989. In the report, there's no indication to say that he was intoxicated. That's the last time anybody had seen him. His detective then interviewed his family, finds out that all his clothes is at the house. He didn't pack anything. His bank account hasn't been touched. Nothing unusual on the bank account. He had some money in there, but it was nothing unusual. At that point, the detective started trying to interview friends of his. They found a phone book, a little black book that he had in his bedroom. with numbers in there. They called those people. Based on those interviews, speaking to friends, a former girlfriend, they all had said that Adrian had thought about going to Texas, moving to Texas. He had two close friends that had moved to Texas just recently and that he had talked about going there. And pretty much at that point, there was nothing else for the detectives to follow up on. They had entered some information in the NCIC about a missing person. His vehicle was entered in there. If any other law enforcement officer had stopped his vehicle, it would have been reported to us, and they didn't receive anything on that. They had followed up with the VIN number, too. There was no information on that. So basically, at this point, it was, you know, he was a missing person. Was there foul play? There's nothing substantial to say that, but circumstantially, as an investigator, you would have to think this is unusual for someone to act like that, to just disappear without taking your clothes or your money or telling anybody that you were leaving. Based on a report from 1989, the detective interviews, he had broken up with his girlfriend a couple of months before he had disappeared, but they said he didn't appear to be depressed over the situation. And I did state earlier that they interviewed his girlfriend. They didn't interview his girlfriend. They couldn't locate her. But that's something we're following up on right now. We've got a couple of addresses on her. We're trying to interview her to see if she can recall, was he acting differently? Did he tell her anything that, you know, maybe being his girlfriend, being close, he may have told her something that was, you know, substantial that we could look at.
In this particular case, Lieutenant Cunningham finds it strange that Adrian's car was never spotted or recovered. He told us more about an effort a few years ago to trace the car.
A lot of times we'll get missing person reports, their vehicle's missing, and, you know, you give it a couple of days, maybe a couple of weeks, and the person returns or we locate where they're at. That's a large percentage of the time. In this case, we haven't found anything on the vehicle. I think in 2017, they went back, looked at the case, and what they were focusing on at that time was either the license plate or the VIN number to see if they can track. You know, maybe somebody found an abandoned car and you turn the license plate in at DMV, or they tried to retitle the car with the VIN, and we hadn't found any activity on either the VIN or the license plate.
Often when someone and their vehicle go missing together, the likely outcome is an accident, and often an accident where the car has gone into a waterway. Lieutenant Cunningham told us that he feels this is an unlikely theory in Adrian's case.
When you called me about this, it was the first time I actually looked at the case, and it was real interesting, and had a lot of questions when I read the reports, and I said, well, this is what we're going to follow up, you know, I mean, there's a lot of unanswered questions here. And let's just try to eliminate them. And, you know, we have a lot of waterways here in the city. We have canals, you know, to drain the water, but we are a city. Barbara brought up, suppose this car went in the canal and we never found it. Well, you know, our canals, we drain them, not completely to the bottom, but it'd be enough to where if there was a car in that canal, you would see something. So, and 30 years later, I don't think it wouldn't have gotten to the point where we wouldn't have found that. So we kind of, you know, eliminated that. I know that was something Barbara brought up. That's the sister. I don't think it was that. Unless he drove somewhere out the city in the Bayou Swamp area where there's only, a two-lane road, and he swerved off the road and went to the swamp. But same thing, you know, the water rises and drops. So I think we would have found something then. We've had, actually, it was a missing person report. Someone had reported a missing. 2 days later, we found that, well, someone saw the top of a car in a canal. It had rained heavily for 2 days at the time the individual went missing. He was leaving a casino, had been drinking, and taking the wrong turn. And it was a zigzag to go over a bridge that went over the canal. And we found where he went straight. There was two signs in between where he went through. He didn't touch one of those two signs. It was pretty amazing that he went through those two signs and ended up in the canal. It was reported as a missing person. 2 days later, someone sees the top of the car in the canal, reports it. We pull it out, and we found the individual in there. Where we live at, we have the Lake Pontchartrain on the north side, and we have the Mississippi River on the south side. And when the river gets too high, they use the canals and pumps to push the water to the lake. And when the storms are coming with the flood and the canals start to rise, we use pumps to pump the water to the river. So that water is rising, you know, going up and going down all the time based on, you know, whatever situation's needed. So, and a lot of times, like recently, we had to pump water from the river to the lake because the river was rising so high. It was kind of like a record as far as how high the water went. So they drain all the canals. A lot of them was really, it was the first time I'd seen them where they had gotten so low where you could almost see the bottom. So I would think if there was anything in any of the canals on the path that he would have taken from the bar to his house, he would have been, the vehicle would have been found.
The Vanished is sponsored by BetterHelp. With social gatherings picking up after the winter, it can be easy to ignore your social battery and spread yourself thin. It's a good time to think about the right amount of socializing for you. Maybe you thrive around people, or maybe you prefer more alone time. Therapy can give you the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your battery. A therapist can help you learn how to set boundaries so you feel empowered to be the best version of yourself. Everyone can benefit from therapy. It's not just for those who've experienced major trauma. So, if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, so it's designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/vanished today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/vanished.
Imagine upgrading your wardrobe with luxury essentials at unbeatable prices. Quince is here to transform the way you shop with a range of high-quality items priced within reach, like 100% Mongolian cashmere sweaters for $50, organic cotton sweaters, washable silk tops, and timeless 14-karat gold jewelry. The best part, all Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. By partnering directly with top factories, Quince cuts out the cost of the middleman and passes the savings on to us. And I was thrilled to learn that Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing practices and premium fabrics and finishes. I love that. I now have several items from Quince. I love their cardigans, pants, and shirts. I find their pieces to be easy to mix and match, and also to dress up or dress down. Indulge in affordable luxury. Go to quince.com/vanished for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince.com/vanished to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/vanished. The police have also tried putting Adrian's picture out there, but no leads came in. So they decided to hone in on the one viable angle.
It was reported September 25th. Detectives did their interview. On October 12th of 89, they did a news broadcast, didn't receive any calls. Then in March 7th of 1994, they did another news story, putting it out to the public. Didn't receive any information. Then in November 2017, it was put out on the local news, and we still haven't received any information. Myself and another detective that are looking at the case a second time, we're kind of focusing on the Texas angle. He had two close friends that had moved to Texas. We interviewed one of them. We found him. We're trying to find the second one. And we're trying to narrow down, okay, when did they actually go to Texas? And the one we did interview, you know, considering it's 30 years ago, he couldn't give us a specific time frame. So the interview actually lasted almost 2 hours. We kind of narrowed it down to within a couple of weeks of when they had gone to Texas and when Adrian went missing. And that's still not definitive, but that's pretty close, which you know, just kind of raises some suspicion whether they knew anything about Adrian, because the people they interviewed in 89 all said that Adrian had talked about moving to Texas. So we're just looking at that angle. We're trying to find the second individual that moved to Texas also at the same time to interview him. That's what we're working on now. And we're kind of broadening what we're looking at in Texas by relations of the two individuals that moved there, just trying to find, you know, where those their relatives lived at and see if there's any angle there. Maybe a vehicle's parked on the property and just abandoned there, or maybe there's something to find. Some point in 1989, the uncle of Adrian had called the police, said he got an anonymous call claiming that the restaurant that Adrian worked at were running drugs and that Adrian was a drug runner and that he was set up by the drug dealers. We've checked the owners of the business at the time, the employees of the business at that time in 1989, to see if any of their names had came up in any drug investigation, whether it be local or federal, and that came to a dead end. We couldn't find anything. And, you know, just having a suspicious investigative mind, you know, to me, it looks like maybe that call was made to the uncle because they knew the uncle's phone number to throw the police off in a different direction, which kind of adds to the foul play suspicion. But at that time in 1989, they didn't try to get the phone number, trace the number. You know, you got to consider back then we didn't have the technology we have now, which makes it a lot easier now. But we don't have that phone number, so we don't know who made that call. I happened to come across Adrian's younger sister, Barbara, just recently, just this Saturday, just out and about in the city. And we started talking, and she had mentioned the name of another friend of Adrian, who was very close friends with the two guys that moved to Texas. She said Adrian and those three were like inseparable, and we never did have that name. So we're kind of looking at that angle also, something to kind of spark the case. We're going to try and eliminate every investigative avenue that we can. You know, just like speaking to the sister, she mentions his name. It was nowhere in the report. She only knew him by his first name. So we went back in Adrian's old high school yearbook. We came up with somebody with the first name, like the sister had said, graduated with Adrian. So Detective Jesse Johnson, who's helping with the case, is meeting with the sister this morning to show her that picture to see if that is the individual that she's talking about. You know, we have people living in Florida, people living in Texas. So it's kind of hard to do. You know, when you do an interview, you'd rather be sitting with the person face to face. But sometimes it's, you have to do what you have to do.
Lieutenant Cunningham is determined to bring the Pownell's family some answers after all of these years, even with little evidence to go on. He shared some of what's changed in the landscape of criminal investigations over the last 30 years, and how he's confident this case can be solved.
Like I said, the one was an anonymous call to the uncle. They interviewed all employees there. Nobody has said anything about any drugs involved. Speaking to Adrian's friends, none of them said anything about drugs involved. You know, Adrian never had any criminal history. He's never really given his family any problems. And one of the friends he did talk to about moving to Texas, it was kind of odd. He did ask him, he says, well, if I moved to Texas, would you tell my parents? And that's coming from the 1989 report. So we tried to track down that individual, and he passed away in 2015. So that's the only one that said anything about not telling my parents. Everybody else had mentioned about it. And in speaking to Adrian's sister, she remembers that the parents did go to Texas, and they tried to speak to the two friends of Adrian's that had moved there, but they weren't unable to speak to them. So the family was aware that Adrian had considered moving to Texas. The father went up there to try to talk to the two guys, but wasn't able to talk to them. Now, the officer, the detective handling the case in 89, did speak with a uncle of the two individuals who said that those two individuals were living at his house, gave his address in Rockwall, and that he said that he knew Adrian himself, and that as far as he spoke to the two nephews, and neither one of them said they knew anything about Adrian's disappearance. And those two nephews, we did interview one of them recently. We checked with Onamus, with other agencies, and now with modern technology, you know, if another agency in two states east of us finds a body, the information gets sent through NCIC, we'll get the email, and then we'll start checking our files to see if there's anything matching. But if you find someone 30 years later, typically there won't be much left. But with DNA and modern technology, they can kind of ascertain the age of the individual, his ethnicity, and sometimes with that, we can do comparisons, you know, familial DNA, and sometimes that'll match, sometimes it won't. But as of right now, we haven't come across anything such as that.
Finally, we asked Lieutenant Cunningham what anyone with information about Adrian should do.
If anybody has any information about Adrian Planels, they can contact the Kenner Police Department at 504-712-2222. If you live outside the state, you can call your local police department. They will contact us. You can contact Crime Stoppers if you want to remain anonymous. And you can call me directly. You don't have to give your name or nothing. My phone number is 504-712-2420, and it's Lieutenant Mike Cunningham. If there is some information, we can make a reward available if you contact Crime Stoppers, and it does lead to a criminal investigation, or even if it just clears the missing person definitively, I'm sure we can arrange a reward.
For Barbara, the past 30 years have been difficult, having no answers as to what happened to her brother. But she's hopeful that with the renewed interest in the case, someone will come forward with information.
Because of you, like, contacting them and everything, they've really reopened the case. Like, before, when I tried, I don't know why, it's like they've kind of, like, ignored whenever I would try, and I would try to reopen it 2 years ago when I went, and I thought they were doing what they're doing now. They were questioning people, but apparently they didn't do anything at all, because now it's like they actually found a whole bunch of people. And they're questioning them now. And I'm like, okay, well, why didn't you do this 2 years ago when I sat there and did different newscasts for, news anchors that came out to talk to me about the missing case. And that's when they reopened it again. And then they came to my house and they talked to me and they were going to go question people, but they never did. And then the detective never answered a phone for me whenever I called him. So now I don't know what you did or what you said, girl, but they're literally like, going, and they've been calling me, and they're like, yeah, we found so-and-so, and we're questioning them, and we found this, and I'm like, oh, really? I said, oh, you're finding all kinds of things now. Oh, okay, that's great. So hopefully we'll get somewhere, you know, something, you know, so we'll see what happens. Yeah, the guy that they have now on it, he seems like he's really good, and he's like, you know, old cases really intrigue me, and so he said that when he's seen this, he just had to jump on it. I'm like, well, thank you. So, let's see what happens.
So what happened to Adrian Planels on September 24th, 1989? He was a bright young man with his entire life ahead of him and had no known enemies. Would he just choose to disappear? Possibly moving to Texas like he allegedly mentioned to a friend? Did he get into some kind of accident and his car was never found? Do those two friends know more than they've ever shared? Why did they suddenly move to Texas? If they harmed Adrian, what motive did they have? What motive would anyone have had to harm him? What was that anonymous phone call about? And what about his car? Why hasn't it ever been recovered? At the time of his disappearance, Adrian Planels was 23 years old. He was approximately 5'4" tall and weighed around 130 pounds. He had brown hair and brown eyes. If you have any information about the disappearance of Adrian Planels, you're urged to call the Kenner Police Department at 504-466-4606.
Like I said, this case, to me, is very, it's strange, and it falls under foul play, but circumstantially. We don't have anything to say it is foul play, or nobody, you know, to substantiate that, but you know, you have to look at it as that. If you just look at it as a missing person, nothing would be done on this. So We're going out there trying to re-interview everybody. Of course, it's 30 years later. But, you know, we gain a little bit of information here, there, and this might raise some suspicion, but you have to look at it and eliminate it and then go on from there.
So it's just agonizing. It's like, you know, it's like I'm telling investigators, some people go missing and then unfortunately they find them and they're deceased, but at least they found them. And then it's like they have to go on around and see what happened to them, but they know that they have them there. They know what happened to them. Us, it's like we don't even know what happened. We don't know nothing. Nothing. We just seen him drive away and that was it. It's just been hard, you know. It's hard like to talk about it. Sometimes people ask me, people that grew up with me, they'll be like, dang, I can't believe you still haven't found anything out. And it's hard, like, to sit there and to think, wow, it's going to be 30 years in September and nothing, nothing. That's my hope. That's my prayer. I've been praying for this for years, for some answers. And my hope and prayer is that hopefully with us keeping his name out there and putting this story out there, maybe someone will finally want to be like, you know what, it's time to just let this go and just say something. And like I said, me hoping that with them knowing that I really sincerely don't want to do any justice, don't want to do no jail, don't want nothing like that. I just want answers. Hopefully that'll motivate them to even want to talk more, because I'm being serious. Like I was telling the investigator, like I told him, I said, I'm a woman of my word and I don't go back on my word. And I'm telling you this, and I'm telling you this as a woman, I just want answers. I don't want anything else but answers.
That brings us to the end of episode 200. I'd like to thank everyone who spoke with us for this story. If you have a missing loved one that you'd like to have featured on the show, there's a case submission form at thevanishedpodcast.com. If you'd like to join in on the discussion, there's a page and a discussion group on Facebook. I'm on Twitter at thevanishedpod and also on Instagram. If you enjoy this show, subscribe now and leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Wondery.com, or wherever you're listening right now. Do you want to help support the show? There are a couple things that you can do. One way to help The Vanished is by supporting our sponsors. You can find links and promo codes in the episode notes. Another way to support the show is by contributing on Patreon, where you can get early and ad-free episodes. Join me next time. I'll be covering a case from Wisconsin. Thanks for listening.
Whether you're working out, walking, or running errands, Audible can help you keep your heart rate up month after month with their pulse-pounding collection of thrilling audiobooks that you can't hear anywhere else. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog, which includes thousands of titles. This month, check out the Audible original, The Space Within. It's a chilling 8-part story about a psychiatrist, Dr. Maddie Weil, voiced by Academy Award winner Jessica Chastain, who is tasked with unlocking the memories of a child who went missing for 7 hours. Maddie soon discovers that there are more who have faced similar experiences, and the truth of what is happening to them may impact the fate of humankind. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/thrill or text thrill to 500-500. That's audible.com/thrill or text thrill to 500-500.
It's all a lighthearted nightmare on our podcast, Morbid.
We're your hosts. I'm Alina Urquhart.
And I'm Ash Kelly.
And our show is part true crime, part spooky, and part comedy.
The stories we cover are well-researched.
He claimed and confessed to officially killing up to 28 people.
With a touch of humor.
I'd just like to go ahead and say that if there's no band called Malevolent Deity,
that is pretty great.
A dash of sarcasm and just garnished a bit with a little bit of cursing.
This motherfucker
lied.
Like a liar.
Like a liar.
And if you're a weirdo like us and love to cozy up to a creepy tale of the paranormal,
or you love to hop in the Wayback Machine and dissect the details of some of history's most notorious crimes,
you should tune in to our podcast, Morbid. Follow Morbid on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen to episodes early and ad-free by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.